to live righteously.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Holics, episode number 122. In the second and third blocks, we visit with Drew Manning, fit to fat to fit. He's the guy that maybe you heard about, maybe you've seen on the Today Show and some other places, where he was a personal trainer, then he gained a bunch of weight, and then he lost a bunch of weight too. Spoiler alert, don't worry, I think you probably already knew that, but we catch up with him after my wife and I went to a fitness expo and ran into him and asked him if he'd be willing to be in the Cultural Hall. That's what the second and third block of this episode is. Go now to a review on our iTunes. This is from Big Dog RC. And don't worry, Rob, I know as you're listening to this, I'll let you talk about this and refute this and bring up your thing. But Big Dog RC says, I think that the show has improved recently. They've done some really good interviews, especially lately, and have brought some stories to me that are not part of the traditional Mormon experience. There have been a few episodes that I didn't really care for, interviews with former members, but I just move along to another great episode. I really enjoy the Articles of News segments. Those are the ones that we publish every Monday, and you can subscribe to all this going to iTunes or to Stitcher. That's where we do our feed, and you can subscribe to what comes out. It says, even though some of the items I've heard, that being in Articles of News, I will have already heard, I often hear more details than I had previously. The only drawback that I find is that some of the more liberal or leftist views, especially those of DJ Rob, I'm not a traditional conservative myself, but if I want politics, I'll listen to a political podcast. That's from Big Dog RC. So thank you for sending that in. And then another one, here we go. This is from Mama Bug. Says, I recently discovered the Cultural Hall podcast, I mean show, when they interviewed Bill Reel, who hosts another great LDS-themed podcast series that is more serious and thought-provoking, but I digress. It was love from the beginning, and I'm now working on becoming a lifer status. For the uninitiated, and this is her description, not mine, for the uninitiated, this term is used to describe those who have listened to all the episodes. I really enjoy listening to the Articles of News and their witty commentary. I've even linked a few episodes from Facebook, and some people have actually listened. I'm all about the missionary work here. In my next life, I would want to be a Cultural Hall co-host because they're so effortlessly cool and hip. Alas, I am a 38-year-old SAHM. I'm not sure what that means. Singapore. I don't know. SAHM. Help me out. Living in Utah County, so that's probably not going to happen. I'm not nearly as interesting as these guys, gals, and their guests, but thanks for the diversion. You people rock, really. So thank you very much, Mama Bug. Let's get to this episode of the Cultural Hall. Remember, you can find us online at theculturalhall.com. You can follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. You can look us up on Facebook. It's facebook.com/theculturalhall. We do the Google Plus thing, and you could subscribe and leave your own review of The Cultural Hall, and we'd love for you to do that by going to iTunes, by going to Stitcher, and anywhere else you're able to get your podcasts. And by podcasts, I mean shows. All right, let's get to it. Coming up in the second and third block, it's Fit to Fat to Fit. It's Drew Manning.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and on the phone with me, Drew Manning. Good to have you here, Drew.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Now, if you hear the name Drew Manning and you go, okay, well, that sounds like a mighty familiar name, but I don't know where I'm placing it from, think of Fit to Fat to Fit. And I always get that backwards. I always think of my own personal life story, which is fat to fit to fat. But you can check that out.
Yeah, I have a lot of people telling me that. I have a lot of people that tell me that, unfortunately. But it's kind of funny. So yes, it is Fit to Fat to Fit.
Pretty interesting story. You can find it at fittofattofit.com. But we don't want you to go there. We want you to listen to the story right now. So, Drew, tell me a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So, let's see. I'm 33 years old. Married, father of two little girls that are 4 and 2. I've grown up I come from a big family of 11 kids. We grew up all active, playing sports. I specifically played football and wrestling pretty much my whole life. So I grew up very active. And I also grew up with a very black and white mentality, especially when it came to fitness. I became a personal trainer back in 2009 and found out I had a passion for it. And I had a very black and white mentality when it came to fitness. And what I mean by that is either, you chose to be healthy or you were lazy and you chose not to be healthy. And it was very, kind of black and white mentality. And that's what I'm trying to get across, is that that's the way I viewed it. Either you chose to be healthy and it was super easy, all you had to do was eat healthy and go to the gym. And why is it so hard for people, right?
Which, by the way, is one of the most frustrating attitudes that I've encountered as far as that goes, is when you meet the people that are just like, well, just take care of yourself. Just eat right. Just, and I don't think that they mean, and I don't think that you at that time necessarily meant it the way that it comes across, but it's like, it's not that easy, and you kind of come off a little pompous.
Yeah, no, and totally. And that's kind of the disconnect I had with some of my clients who were overweight, that they would just say, you know what, you don't understand. You've always been that way. It's easy for you. The thing I didn't see at the time was that, yes, it might be simple as far as, yes, you do need to eat healthy, you do need to exercise, but the application is not easy. It's very far from it, because if it was easy, everyone would be in shape, right?
Well, maybe. I want to ask you a question, though. Let's go back a little bit. You said you're from a family of 11.
Sure. Yes.
Is that a Mormon family of 11?
Is it what?
Are you a Mormon family? Big Mormon family? Catholic
yes.
family? So born and raised
course.
Mormon.
Born and raised Mormon. My parents were hardcore. 11 kids. Just your typical Mormon family from the 80s. It does.
where do you fall in the 11 kids?
I'm the seventh. My parents had 8 boys, 3 girls, and I'm the seventh kid. So somewhere towards the middle.
That seems like the largest amount of sibling rivalry, and if the boys all got into it, blood and bones would be broken.
That's pretty much it. That happened a lot growing up, especially the first 5 were all boys.
Oh,
and
geez.
They all played sports, and they were, my poor mom, because it was a stay-at-home mom, my dad worked, had to deal with 5 boys, first of all, and then she finally got a girl. But yes, a lot of fights, we didn't get along all the time as kids. So.
What does dad do that avails him the opportunity to have 11 kids? Because you got to be making some pretty good money.
See, so that's a good question. And I don't really ever remember him making a lot of money, and I don't think he did. He probably had an average paying salary. He was a software engineer for IBM, and we were never poor. But we didn't grow up with the luxuries of, we hardly ever ate out as a family because mm-hmm. that was super expensive. We hardly ever ordered pizza. We grew up on powdered milk. my parents were very frugal. We didn't have a lot of money. My dad probably made an average salary, but he always had a job. So I don't ever remember going without food, but I remember going over to friends' houses. Their pantries were stocked with cereals and Oreos and, all the good stuff. We had homemade stuff from scratch all the time.
So that may lend some to your wise eating then, really, just because of availability.
That's a good question. Yeah, it could be. I mean, when my mom made food, it wasn't really healthy food, looking back on it, but it was just, what could she make that could feed 11 kids? So it was a lot of casseroles, a lot of lentil soups. but it wasn't as highly processed as the foods you see nowadays. So that's true.
Okay, so now let's jump forward. Sorry, I wanted to take that leap back just to get kind of a feel of where you're coming from. So you're a personal trainer. It's 2000.
Sure.
It's 2009. It's not black. It's not white. Come on, why don't you take care of yourself? There, now we're caught up.
Okay, so that's basically where we were. And I felt like maybe when my clients would tell me that they didn't understand what it was like, I kind of reflected on that and kind of took it to heart and thought, maybe they're right. Maybe I don't know why their struggles. And I felt like I needed to learn some lessons because what I was doing wasn't working. Every time they told me they cheated on their meal plans or they didn't go to the gym, I would get frustrated. And so I didn't understand why it was a struggle for them. So I felt like I needed to do something, and this idea of getting fat on purpose, for some reason, oddly clicked instantly in my mind, and I felt like it was the right thing to do. As crazy as it sounds, I felt like I really needed to do this for me, but and then also because no one's ever really done it before, and I felt like it could inspire people in a backwards sort of way, and so that's kind of what led me to start this journey.
So let me ask you, at that point though, are you an active Mormon person now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, active and go to church. Yep.
So as far as that goes, though, that's pretty deliberately taken on the word of wisdom, isn't it? Did that come into play in your mind?
That's actually a really good question. And one of my brothers teased me about that. He's like, hey, you know, you should probably clear this with your bishop, which was kind of funny. And I actually didn't go clear it with my bishop, but I talked to him about it because I've talked to him before and, you know, I know him really well. And I was just joking around with him and I brought this idea across and he didn't seem to have a problem with it. But at the same time, yes, letter of the law, you know, it probably was against the word of wisdom. I feel like if maybe I brought in drinking and smoking, my bishop might have had a problem with that, of course.
Yeah, but, probably.
exactly. But I didn't, you know, obviously I had to draw the line somewhere. But I felt like this is something a lot of people look past because food is legal. It tastes really, really good, and it's affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's marketed to us all the time as sometimes it's healthy. But and I'll get into that a little bit later about what types of foods that I ate, because I didn't do a supersize me fast food mm-hmm. type of diet. I kind of went a different route. But a lot of the food is marketed to us as, oh, this is healthy, you should eat it. And, being from the Mormon culture, obviously we do have a problem in the church. You know, there's always... every time there's a meeting, there's got to be donuts or brownies or cookies. Am I right?
Right. Absolutely. It is something we've talked about here in the Cultural Hall quite a bit, where we focus really heavily about the don't drink, don't smoke. Forget about the other stuff in the Word of Wisdom where it says take care of yourself. Not that important. But don't drink and don't smoke.
Exactly. Exactly. That's kind of funny.
So then what? So you talk to the bishop, you decide, hey, you know what, I'm thinking about doing this. This is the thing that, and are you married at this time?
Yep, married. And so, of course, I had to get it approved by my wife, which it's kind of a funny story because she was pregnant at the time that I told her about this. And of course, that was crazy. She's like, you're not going to be able to do it because you complain after 2 days of not going to the gym, you complain that you're getting fat. And that's the type of person I was, right? Like, really obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
And but then I talked to her. I'm like, no, I'm really going to do it. I think it's a good idea. I feel that it's the right thing to do for me and for others. And she was pregnant, and she's like, so you're telling me there's going to be a bunch of junk food in her house for 6 months? And she's like, I'm on board. So it got, you know, her approval. And, you know, I kind of ran across some friends and family, and they're all like, yeah, you know, I could see that, you know, being, you know, kind of big and, you know, a really good idea. And so I felt like it was the right thing, and so I ran with it.
So give me an idea of how you were when you were about to start this. You said you're a personal trainer. You said that you're eating pretty good and you saw everything black and white. But give me an idea, physique. Do you know what percent body fat you were, and, you know, how much were you going to the gym every day, that kind of thing? Give me an idea, start where you're at.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So I was probably around 8% body fat at this time, right? That's kind of where I hover, around 8 to 10%. You know, I worked out 5 days a week for about an hour to maybe an hour and a half in the gym. But yeah, I was pretty religious about it. I ate healthy. My full-time job actually wasn't a personal trainer. My full-time job was in the medical field, and then I did personal training part-time on the side.
Okay.
So I just kind of want to put that up there to lay the story of you know, how this happened. But anyway, yeah, I was a part-time personal trainer, full-time working in the medical field, and yeah, physique-wise, yes, I had a six-pack, and I ate healthy. I knew how to eat. I knew how to train, and that's kind of the life I was living.
All right, so then you said, boom, let's do this. I'm going fit to fat. So what'd you do?
Yeah, so, well, first I had to learn how to create a website because I had no idea how to do it. And so I paid for one of those, like, templates and just kind of got some advice from some people on how to do it. because I wanted to document my journey. And so the first day, I had a friend film me. I was introducing my challenge. I created a YouTube channel. And I actually put it out there on Facebook beforehand, announcing what I was going to do. And I had people submit ideas for a food challenge. So have you seen Man vs. Food before?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, the TV show. So basically what I wanted to do to for entertainment purposes was throughout my Fit to Fat journey is once a week, my fans or followers could submit ideas for food challenges. And once a week, I would do food challenges. So my first day, Fit to Fat, in the morning, my friend comes over, films me. The first food challenge I do is try and eat a dozen donuts. And, you know, I get on camera, I announce what my plan is for this Fit to Fat journey, 6 months of no exercise, eating whatever I want to. And then I bring in the plate of donuts, 12, and I just go to town trying to eat it as fast as I can, shove it down. At first, it tastes good. These are Krispy Kreme donuts, you know. I'm like, okay. Oh, man, this is actually really, really good.
You're like, maybe this won't be so hard. I like this.
Exactly. And so after, like, the first two or three, I'm like, oh, man, this is delicious. And so I kept going and going. I got to about five or six, and I started to feel sick. And then I was able to finish my seventh, and I felt like I was going to throw up, which I did not want to do on camera, my first YouTube video. So I threw in the towel at seven donuts, and I failed my first food challenge. So food won, and I only got seven donuts down. And then that's how it started. Every day thereafter was no exercise and an unrestricted diet.
So going into this, you talked about the first thing that you needed to do was get a website because you want to document it. Were you hoping that it would be more of like a journal thing, or are you looking at it like, hey, here's a business proposition moving forward?
That's a good question. So it was more for, let's see, so my idea, the reason I was documenting it was because I wanted to gain some followers to educate, right? I didn't have any kind of media connections. I didn't know if this would become big, like it would become a viral hit and people would want to follow the journey. I thought people might follow it to laugh at it, you know, or kind of like, look at this guy. But, you know, I did want to educate some people along the way of what I was doing by showing them what not to do, and hopefully that would inspire them. I thought maybe the local news would pick it up. That's the reason I documented it, so people could kind of see exactly what I was doing to teach them and educate them about what I was doing to my body.
Okay. So you lose your first challenge, then it's no exercise except for like walking around or whatever to get to your places, and open diet. So talk about that journey then to getting fat.
Yeah. So, okay. So it begins, right? I kind of recovered from my first challenge. It took a while though. It took a good 4 hours to recover from that. But so what I wanted to do, instead of supersize me, I think most of us know eating McDonald's three times a day is not very healthy, right?
Right. Especially, and no,
you know,
and no
you
one,
get it supersized.
Yeah. And no one really does that. I don't think that's really a real, you know, reality based experience.
Exactly. So the foods that I wanted to focus on were everyday American foods. So things like white bread, white pasta, sugary cereals, granola bars, juices, sodas, any kind of soda, you know, frozen pizzas, macaroni and cheese, SpaghettiOs, any kind of highly processed food that is cheap, it's convenient, and, you know, you can, is at any grocery store. That's pretty much what I focused on.
Okay.
So anything that was packaged, canned, microwavable, those types of meals is what I ate 6.5 days out of the week. The other meal was the fast, was whatever the challenge was, you know, and I can get into specifics of what some of them were. But basically, so here, let me give you a typical day for me. I would wake up in the morning, Cinnamon Toast Crunch was my drug of choice.
Oh,
I'll be honest, that for some reason was delicious.
Oh.
And nobody has the 3/4 cup serving size, right?
No way.
Suggested serving size. So I would have this huge, massive bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch with a glass of juice for breakfast. And then a couple hours later, for my snack, you know, between breakfast and lunch, you're
sure.
hungry again.
Sure.
So I probably have like a granola bar and a soda, and my drink of choice was Mountain Dew.
Oh, there you go.
And I couldn't buy any diet soda. That was another rule. No diet soda, just full on the regular non-diet soda, right?
Yeah, so fully loaded, baby.
Fully loaded, yep. And then for lunch, I would probably have a couple of peanut butter sandwiches, like peanut butter and fluff or peanut butter and honey on white bread. So didn't eat any wheat bread, just all white bread. And then a couple hours later after lunch, I would have probably some chips and some cookies and another Mountain Dew. And then for dinner, I would usually have some kind of white pasta with marinara sauce and meatballs, with some garlic bread. And then that was my dinner. And then of course, before you go to bed, you got to eat something as well. Like around 9 o'clock, you get hungry again. And that usually consisted of another bowl of Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh, yes. This is...
it tastes even better at night for some reason. I have no idea why, but that's usually what I did.
This is my dream diet. You have just described everything that I want to eat in a day. Done. If that was my diet every single day, that would be heaven.
And I'll be honest with you, Richie, it really was fun for the first, like, month or two, like, going to the grocery store. You got these 10 for 10 coupons of soda and cereal boxes. I'm like, all right, 10 for 10. I would just load up my cart with any kind of, you know, cereal or soda and, you know, granola bars or chips or cookies, whatever, you know, whatever was, like, the deal of the week. And you could just load up your grocery cart with, you know, all kinds of foods. And it was fun. You know, it was for about the first month or two.
And and then what happened?
And then a few things started to change. Obviously, I gained about 24 pounds, I think, in the first month.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. The first week was a 12-pound gain, mostly water weight probably. But 24 pounds in the first month. So for me, it was noticeable. For other people, they couldn't really tell, you know, unless I had my shirt off. Like, people really couldn't tell I was gaining weight yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, a couple months into it, I started snoring, which my wife did not appreciate because, like I said, she was pregnant, trying to sleep. She's always tired. And I started snoring. And then my breathing.
So not a snorer before at all. And then the weight created the snoring.
Yeah, so it's basically as you gain visceral fat, like around your organs, your lungs, for example, it makes it more and more difficult to breathe, and it kind of snoring is definitely a side effect of weight gain. But and then I started noticing it was more and more difficult to breathe. Like, for example, my oldest daughter was 2 at the time, and she wanted to run, and my breathing, my cardio was not nearly as good as it was, and so it became harder to breathe walking up the stairs. Or if I ate a really big meal, I would be so stuffed that, like, it would be hard to breathe afterwards because mm-hmm. there's so much food and it was harder to breathe. And, you know, just getting off the couch or bending over, you can't breathe. Like, tying my shoes, I had no idea it would become so difficult the bigger I got. Bending over and clipping my toenails almost seemed impossible. Like, I had to come up for air after every, you know, 10 to 20 seconds.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bending over and clipping my toenails.
Yeah, you start to give up on that stuff, man. You don't need it anymore. You're like, well, I guess I could do that, but that seems far too exhausting. I'm just going to go ahead and we'll let those suckers grow for a little while.
Exactly. And then came the mental and emotional side. Physically, I knew the man boobs would grow, the love handles would, you know, fall out to the side, and I would get this big old butt. I knew the physical transformation would happen, right? The mental and emotional side is kind of what took its toll on me. You have to understand, like, I grew up, you know, always in shape, you know, for the most part. And I was pretty confident going out in public, going to the gym, going anywhere. I was confident. But then the bigger I got, now I became super self-conscious out in public. Like, it was just really difficult for me to go out with a big pot belly. Because I wanted to tell people, look, this isn't me. I'm just doing this experiment.
No,
you know,
look, it's a website.
Really.
You don't understand. It's for a website. You don't get it. I'm not, this isn't the guy. I'm not this guy. It's a website.
Exactly. Like, I wanted to tell people so bad, like, look, hey, you know, just random strangers, this isn't me. I promise I'm not overweight. You normally, it's just for a website. So, but I didn't, you know, and it was hard for me. You know, my self-esteem and my confidence levels definitely took a hit. And then, you know, even for me, you know, in front of my wife, like, I wanted to cover up in front of her. I didn't want her to see me naked stepping out of the shower because I didn't like the way I looked. And so I didn't want her to see me like that. But I knew she didn't care. She told me she's dated overweight guys before.
Mm-hmm.
So for her, she didn't care. It was more of my confidence. Like, there's nothing sexier than confidence. And I'll be honest, that's the truth. Like, if you're confident in who you are, that's attractive. But I lost my confidence. And then at the same time, I wasn't as helpful around the house. Not because I chose to be, but because it takes such a toll on you when you're unhealthy and overweight. You don't have the energy levels you used to have. And so I'll admit I wasn't as helpful around the house, but not by nature, but because of the toll it took on me. And so that kind of caused some confrontation, of course, as you can imagine. You should be helpful with the kids and the chores, and now all of a sudden I didn't have the energy I used to have.
Yeah, why can't you be more helpful? It's for a website! It's for a website! Get off my back!
Only 6 months of this, babe.
Yeah, come on. Yeah. Count it down. Let's go to the calendar. Let's see where we're at. There. You can start looking forward to me helping again. December. Yeah. Right here. Look on right there. So at the end of this, eating everything that you want and no exercise, first of all, give me chronologically, when are we talking about? What year and what month and everything like that? And then second of all, tell me what your physique looks like at that point.
Yeah, so I began the journey May 7th, 2011. The six-month mark was November 5th, 2011. So I ended up gaining 76 pounds total.
Yeah.
My waist went from a 34-inch to a 47-inch waist.
Oh, my gosh.
So 13-inch gain in my waist, which is where most of the weight was gained. Let's just say it was I'll be honest, your typical average overweight American physique, you know, man boobs, big gut, love handles, and a big butt. I didn't really gain it in my arms and my legs as much as I did the midsection, which is pretty typical for most guys. So that's pretty much what I look like, to paint a picture, not pretty. But, that's kind of where I was at this point in time.
So what about body fat percentage at this point? What do you think?
Oh, that's good. So 34% was my body fat percentage.
Jeez.
At my heaviest. So 8% to 34%. Kind of scary. I did have a doctor monitor me throughout this journey. Once a month, he would take my blood work, do my body fat test, just kind of see where I was. Even did the ultrasound of my liver, just to kind of make sure I wasn't going to die. And
right.
Then also I also went on the Dr. Oz show, which he kind of talked about what I was doing from a medical perspective.
Very cool. Let's talk about all that and then the journey back to being fit. We'll do that in the third block here of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5576 to book your shoot today.
It's time for the third block here of the Cultural Hall. Still on the phone with Drew Manning from Fit to Fat to Fit, and use the numerals Fit and then the number 2, then Fat, then the number 2, then Fit.com. We're talking about your journey to being fat. You talked about the physical changes, getting some badonk on your da-donk and the man boobs and all that stuff. You talked about kind of emotional and maybe some marital strife because you weren't able to do some of the things you were able to do before. What about spiritually? Did you notice anything different spiritually?
You know, that's a good question. I didn't really notice a whole lot spiritually because I still was, you know, active and going to church and there. But during the journey and also looking back on it, it's interesting how your spirituality and your physicality and your mentality are all related. And so even though I was still active and I was still going to church, I do really honestly believe that a healthier you is a happier you. And so even though I was doing this on purpose, it still took its toll on me mentally and emotionally. It definitely leads to your spirituality. And so now, you know, I'm a gospel principles teacher, and it's funny how almost every lesson I teach, no matter what it is, you can always correlate it with health. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very intertwined and related to each other. So people always roll their eyes sometimes because I'm like the Dieter Uchtdorf of health instead of airplanes when it comes to when it comes to stories about the gospel, because I'm always relating it to health.
Oh, great. So here true. We go again. He's going to talk about health. Oh!
It's so true. People always laugh as soon as I bring it up, but almost any lesson I teach, you know, any of the basic gospel principles I teach can definitely be related to health. And it's important for people to hear, but at the same time, you know, like we talked about before, the culture sometimes we're like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, I'm fine. We kind of just brush it aside.
So you're 76 pounds heavier than you were. It's November 5th. It's now 6 months later. And now your journey that you had set out to do is to get you back to being fit.
Yep. So let me set it up before I start going back to fit, how all of this took off, right? So as I was gaining the weight, fitness bloggers wanted to interview me about what I was doing, and one of the blogs got picked up on Yahoo.com on the very front page. So my story showed up on the homepage of Yahoo, and then that's when all the TV shows called, and then that's when Fit to Fit blew up. And in the beginning, I talked about how I didn't have any connections or didn't plan for any of this to happen. I didn't. It was just luck, honestly. And then the TV shows called. I went on the TV shows, and then, yeah, that's how people heard about my brand, and then a book deal came out of it. They wanted me to write a book about what I was doing. And so I did. And when I'm a Dr. Oz show, the reason I bring up that show among the other ones is because he kind of talked about what I was doing from a medical perspective. So, yes, my blood pressure got up to 167 over 113. I developed a fatty liver. My kidneys were like those of an alcoholic. Hmm. Even though I don't drink alcohol, of course, the type of damage that soda does to your organs, your kidneys, is the same type of damage as if I was an alcoholic, my doctor said. And which was really scary and eye-opening for me, because I could see what was happening on the outside, but I didn't feel like I was dying yet on the inside, but the damage it does was very scary and very eye-opening for me. And so that's why I always show people or talk about the Dr. Oz clip to people, to show them what this sedentary lifestyle of eating your typical American diet does to your body over time.
So where in all this did you decide to quit your day job and then this became the thing?
So I guess the book deal happened around the time I started losing the weight. So November, December-ish. And I kept my job until February in the medical field. But it just got to the point where radio interviews, TV interviews, media, trying to write a book, it became too much, and I had to quit my job around January, February, and I focused solely on Fit, Fat, Fit.
And so, does your wife work?
She did. She was working from home full-time for a local company in Utah, and ended up having to quit her job as well just to kind of help out. And she was kind of like my manager, scheduling radio interviews and TV appearances and kind of helping me with that.
I guess I'm just so curious because it seems like for a lot of these types of things, there comes a point where you're like, okay, well, I'm either doing this for real and we're going to take a risk and hope that this pays off, or we need to not do this anymore because trying to lead the both kind of lives it's an impossibility.
Yeah. And that's the way it was, but you know, it was a risk. Because, you know, even though I was getting all this media attention, you don't get paid to go show up on these TV shows. They pay for your airfare and hotel, but you don't get paid to miss work or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a risk. We kind of said, okay, once the book deal happens, you know, we feel that, you know, they give you an advance. That's how it works. So we felt like it was something that we could manage, and we felt like, you know, maybe we can actually turn this into a business, something that we're actually passionate about. And that's when we kind of decided to jump on board 100% with Fit to Fit Fit.
And so you're losing the weight all the time. So let's talk about that. It, hard. You're looking down the barrel of 76 pounds. Hard?
Way harder than I thought it was going to be. So for the first time in my life now, I had to go back to the gym as an overweight guy, which made me nervous to go back into the gym now, where I knew people were going to look at me differently. You know, I went back into the gym anxious, nervous, and obviously nervous looking at the workout that I had to do, because I'm used to pushing people, right? Mm-hmm. Now I had to push myself, and this time I was starting at the bottom of the mountain versus always being at the top, where, you know how to push yourself, but you're in good shape enough to push yourself through the workout. Now I'm struggling to do push-ups on my knees, to do, you know, a sit-up, to do a pull-up, all kinds of the basic things that I used to be able to do confidently. Now I was struggling to do just very basic movements, and it was kind of hard because you do feel a little bit judged in the gym.
Sure.
Not that anybody was mean to me or pushed me over and said, hey, move out of the way, you know, or anything like that. It was it just, you feel like people look at you differently.
Yeah,
even though some people knew who I was or knew what I was doing, not everyone did. And so that's where you feel a little bit of judgment, a little bit of self-consciousness.
Well, I think that there's a thing for people just in general going to the gym, and why I feel like the home workout videos may do that much better. I mean, they're great and everything like that, but like you go to the gym and there's a silent respect for the people that are really taking care of their body. And unfortunately, I think on the other side, I mean, you sometimes look at the people who aren't in such great shape and you have thoughts about them, whether it be like, oh, like you said, oh, you know, that person just needs to work harder. I struggle sometimes when I see people at the gym and I'm just like, you know what? Good for you for being here. And that's how I try and phrase it. But I still have that conscious thought of there's an overweight person at the gym. I can't, you know, stop a thought. I just am trying to give it a positive thought. Just kind of fascinating.
Yeah, I know. And you know, it's very interesting relating that to church. People that go to church, the reason a lot of people that have been inactive or aren't members sometimes struggle with going to church is because they do feel that judgment, whether people are judging them or not. They don't like that feeling of judgment. And there are those people out there who do judge and will give you some looks or say something rude. And that gives people a bad experience, makes them not want to go back. It's the exact same way that I found with people that are overweight who have that fear of going to the gym. It's the same kind of fear of going to church. You know, if somebody shows up at church with a tattoo, people might not want to talk to them. And it's the same way with someone that's overweight that might not know how to use this piece of equipment. And they're not confident enough to ask a random stranger, hey, can you show me?
Mm-hmm.
And some people aren't nice enough to go up to them and say, hey, you know, let me help you. Hey, let me show you what to do. Or do you have any questions? Let me know. That doesn't always happen, unfortunately. It's the same way with going to church sometimes.
Yeah, which is unfortunate because I feel like the same thing with church, too. When I see someone there, gay, straight, tattooed, jeans, I just look at the person and I really try. You know, and I'm probably 99 times out of 100 just being like, all right, you know what? Good for that person for being here. I have no idea where that person comes from. I don't know where that person is in their life. I don't know what they're trying to do. But I know that in this moment, they made it here.
Yep. That's awesome. And that's how it should be. But there are those people, unfortunately, that aren't like that. And that's why people have had bad experiences. And you know, I do try and help people overcome that fear of going to the gym and just kind of prepping them. And it, a lot of it isn't other people judging them. Just because someone doesn't talk to you doesn't mean they're judging you.
Right.
But, you know, it's the fear, the judgment that they put on themselves. Like, oh, that person just looked at me. They're judging me.
Yeah,
so
I was going
to
say,
talk them down from that sometimes.
Yeah, a lot of it probably, too, was just your own judgment seen through what you felt like other people's eyes. But really, it was just you. Did you, when you went back to the gym, difficult time doing the physical stuff, did you change diet overnight?
That's a good question. So I did. I did do it cold turkey. Not that I recommend everybody, but it's definitely something I had to do because I only had 6 months to lose my weight, right? Because I had a deadline of when I had to lose the weight by. And actually something interesting I did for the first 30 days is I skipped going to the gym. I skipped exercise because I wanted to show people how powerful nutrition was. Mm-hmm. I showed them how powerful it was in getting you fat and getting you out of shape and getting you unhealthy. And I wanted to show people how quickly your body can change if you treat it right and how resilient the body is. And so all I did was change my diet, which I did overnight. And I'm not going to lie, it sucked. It sucked to not be able to have Mountain Dew twice a day and Cinnamon Toast Crunch whenever I wanted to, to all of a sudden eating, you know, fresh vegetables and fruits and lean meat and whole foods. It was not fun. Your body revolts, and it feels unnatural for your body to do that, which is why a lot of people quit with diet programs, because their bodies fight back. It's like being addicted to a drug and then all of a sudden, you know, stopping those drugs, and your body goes through withdrawal symptoms and makes you feel horrible. And you tell yourself, you know, well, I'm eating healthy. I shouldn't feel horrible. I should probably go back to where I felt comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it's just like being addicted to drugs. And so anyways, the first 30 days, all I did was focus on changing my nutrition. I went from about 5,000 calories of the processed foods down to 2,000 calories of whole foods. And in those first 30 days, I lost 19 pounds.
Jeez.
All of my blood work, more importantly, went back to normal levels. My testosterone level, which had dropped significantly to the low 200s, more than doubled in just those first 30 days of eating clean. And I'll tell you what, as a guy, it's not fun to have low testosterone levels.
Yeah.
For women, it's good. For men, it's not. And so it was really cool to see how your body is resilient and can change dramatically like that in just 30 days if you treat it right.
And your wife is like, yeah, my man's back. Woohoo! Woohoo!
Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, it's interesting how, well, the first 2 weeks, it was a struggle because I was moody, I was grumpy, I was going through the withdrawal symptoms. The first 2 weeks weren't fun, but after about a month or so, after those 2 weeks, it gets easier. So that's why I tell people, just push through it. If you do cold turkey for the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks maybe, and the symptoms do get better, you know, the cravings are more manageable, they're not as intense, your body adjusts, and I promise you in the end, you'll feel so much better if you push through that first little window of hell, if you will.
So then you start working out after a month.
Then I start working out after a month, and yeah, it was very humbling, I'll say, to go back and try and do the workouts and get back in shape. But this time you're starting from the bottom of the mountain, like I said before, versus always being at the top. Now you're starting from, you know, ground zero, and you're trying to do more than 5 push-ups at a time, or you know, trying to do mm-hmm. 1 pull-up even. So it's just all about progress. You know, I knew that it was going to be a long process, and that as long as I saw progress from week to week in my strength, and of course, you know, weight wise and my measurements, then I knew things were going in the right direction. And I just had to remind myself it's a journey. It's not a destination.
Mm-hmm. And that's an important thing to focus on, because I think in a lot of weight loss stuff, I think people focus so much on the destination.
Yep.
And, you know, recently for me, I'm trying to take better care of my body. About 4 months ago, I mean, I was by no means obese, but I just kind of looked at it and I was like, you know what? I need to be doing some things better. And in times past, I've been cold turkey and try and do like the gym 2.5 hours a day. You know, like that's my first day of trying to get in better shape. And by about 5 days, when I can't move and I'm so sick of eating anything green and leafy, I end up giving up, and this time I'm actually seeing results and seeing you know a great experience from it, because I'm going, you know what, I'll get there. And so long as every week, it's the same thing, kind of gospel oriented too. Sometimes we look at the destination, and instead of going, see, I'm bringing up the gospel again, there goes Brother Manning bringing up the gospel, bringing up
exactly.
fitness. You know, that we need to focus on the journey rather than the destination. Otherwise, it's overwhelming. It's impossible.
Yep. Yeah, no, and that's a really good point. And that's what I try and teach people now, is that it has to be a lifestyle change. It can't just be a quick 30-day, 90-day diet, which Americans love diets, right? Like, oh, what's a new diet program? You know, P90X or you know, this HCG stuff, you know, you do it for 3 months or whatever. And then afterwards they lose weight, but then they go back to their old ways. It doesn't become a lifestyle change. And being a member of the church, it has to be a part of your lifestyle. It can't just be like, hey, I'm going to read the scriptures every day and go to church for 3 months straight, and then, you know, I'll be saved. That's not how it works, yeah. Right? It has to become a part of your lifestyle. I'm not trying to tell people that you need to be skinny. You have to have a six-pack. My goal is for people to focus on becoming medically healthy first, and then weight loss and, you know, the six-pack and those kinds of things, if you really want them, will take care of themselves over time. They'll be a byproduct of living that healthy lifestyle over time versus focusing on, you know, quick, fast results, which, you know, obviously the church obviously, recommends against that, you know, gives advice against these, you know.
Yeah,
that type of mentality.
Well, and it's just it can be just as dramatic. Those fanatic diets can be just as dramatic and torturous on your body as being overweight. If you lose weight too fast, or if you starve yourself, or if you're, yep, you know, any of those kind of things. So did you make it? Did you make it back to the weight?
Yes, I did get back to fit. Obviously, otherwise, you know, my book would have been called Fit to Fat and Stuck, or, you know, I would have had to change up my whole brand. So Fit to Fat to Fit for a reason. I did get back to fit. But I came back a different man. Like, I even though I might look the same physique-wise, the lessons learned were invaluable. And the cool thing about it isn't me getting back in shape. It's honestly how many people were inspired by what I did. Ever since I finished my program, people started sending in success story after success story of their results, their transformations following my program. So I documented my meal plans. I documented my workouts. I gave people a tool and showed them exactly what I did day in and day out for those 6 months and said, hey, you know, let's do this together. Let's lose the weight together, and here's how I'm going to do it, and you just follow me for free. Let's do it together. And it was so cool to see these stories, people's stories from all over the world, and I still get sent in these success stories from people all over the world of how this transformed their life. So as crazy as this idea was, it, at the end of the day, was inspiring and created this large following of people that have transformed their lifestyle. And that's really what Fit to Fat to Fit is all about. It's not so much about me getting back to fit. I did that for myself to learn some lessons. But it was really cool to see how many people were inspired that live this lifestyle and pay it forward by inspiring others, which is why I share their transformation stories on my blog and on my social media.
I think it's just awesome because it is just your story. You didn't have to say, hey, listen to me. I need to, you know, you're not yelling it. You're just living an example of, hey, this is what's going on. And people were drawn to it because, you know, there's a lot of people in sort of similar situations that just need that, either that hope or that inspiration. Or a lot of people, you know, I think that it's just the knowledge of what to do. I remember I always tell this story about how I thought bagels were healthy. And and the reason why is my father is a marathon runner, right? Runs 10 marathons a year. And and so he is skin wrapped around muscle, wrapped around bones. He's just a skinny guy. And I remember before he would go and run, he would eat a bagel, like on a race day or something like that. And so I'd see that and I'd go, Dad, healthy, bagel, healthy, eat bagels, that's healthy.
Yeah.
And then I looked it up and I went, bagel, not healthy. Bagel, good for, you know, what he was doing and for how he needed the energy to run and those things. But I think that there's a lot of those things where we go, oh, you know, it's, I'm making it homemade, so it's automatically healthier than something processed. Yeah. And there may be some truth to that, but maybe not that much.
No, I think there are some, but, you know, it was really interesting to see how many people email me. They're like, that would say, you know, Drew, that's exactly what I eat. Like, what you're eating to gain the weight is exactly what I eat in a day. And I didn't think it was that bad for me to drink a soda, have some cereal, you know, have some pasta. You know, people don't really think about it. And it is that lack of knowledge, unfortunately, that the typical American foods that we grew up on are the same things that are killing us with this obesity epidemic nowadays. Because a lot of us think, oh, well, you got to stay away from fat, fat's bad for you, you know, eat these other foods that are low in fat. And but really that's what's causing the weight gain and the obesity problem more than anything else is the processed carbohydrates, which leads to inflammation in the body, you know, leads to insulin resistance and leads to cardiovascular disease, heart disease, which are the number one killers in America. But people sometimes, it's the lack of education or the lack of desire to make a change sometimes.
Your story is definitely inspiring, something that people are listening to and they want to know more. They can go to fit2fat2fit.com. But I know that this is your livelihood, so I want to give you just, like, I'll even count it out, 60 seconds. I won't count it out loud. But let people know what you're doing now and what people can be involved with. I know that there's some things that cost, so I'll give you 60 seconds to pitch it, and then we'll come back. We'll finish up a couple things and then let you go.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, so to find more about the story, you can go to fit2fat2fit.com with the number 2. You can follow me on Facebook, just, you know, facebook.com/fit2fat2fit. All my social media handles are fit2fat2fit. Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. Follow me online. Follow me for updates. You know, I do speaking engagements. I speak at expos. Obviously, I do have a book, which is a New York Times bestseller, which you can find at Target or Barnes & Noble. Or if you want to order online or on your Kindle or on iTunes, it's all available. At those locations as well. My wife has a fitness blog that's specifically dedicated to women, and it's called 2Fit at Home, number 2, FITATHOME.com, which is a home-based workout program that people can subscribe to with weekly meal plans and grocery lists and recipes and workouts that are updated on a weekly basis. So we have, and on my website, you can find all my free meal plans and recipes and workouts that I use to go from fat to fit.
All right. So now we ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall three questions, and I already know the answer to one of them because you mentioned it earlier. You are a gospel principles teacher in your ward right now.
Yes.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or one that you got to make up, what would you pick?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question. You were kind of breaking up there.
Sorry about that. If you could pick a calling in your ward, in your church service, what would you pick for yourself? It can be one that exists or one that you could entirely make up. What would you make up?
Oh, man, if I could make up my own calling?
Yeah.
Cool. If the church ever adopts this, I would be the health and wellness I don't know what to call it. Health and wellness instructor, or
I think
of the health and fitness.
I think they would call it a specialist. I think they would say a ward health and fitness specialist. And actually, when you said that, I'm like, you know what? Why don't we have something like that?
Yep, that would be great. It would be great to incorporate that somehow. Not that you need to have like a workout program at church or anything like that.
But no,
something where the church is kind of promoting health and wellness to the members to live a healthy lifestyle and give them some knowledge, right? Some people just lack knowledge and don't know it's important, but if the church brings up the importance of it, then members will follow, right?
So yeah.
If I could pick a calling, that would be it, kind of relating gospel principles to health principles and how they're related and how people can live a healthy spiritual lifestyle that go hand in hand.
And then finally, the last question, then we'll let you go, is what is your favorite part of your faith?
The favorite part of my faith? Honestly, it's the calling of being a dad. Like, I never knew how special it would be to be a father from a spiritual perspective, raising two young girls. To me, it is my most important calling in life now, and it's definitely brought me closer to our Heavenly Father more than a mission could, more than anything else could, is being a dad and raising girls in the gospel. To me, is my mission in life. Rather than fit to have to fit, you know, being a dad is my mission to raise these beautiful girls in the gospel and teach them how valuable they are. And they're only 4 and 2, so, you know, mm-hmm. It's got a long ways to go, but it's something I look forward to. I look forward to the challenges of doing that in the gospel.
Well, we hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. and that when the time comes that you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.